Senior Focus. Welcome, everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Khoury, your presenter for this session of Senior Focus. And today I'm wanting to, first of all, give a heads up to our community of seniors that we're going to be enjoying a wonderful film together, those of us who are able to get there, screening at the Vic Theatre in Devonport on the 15th of August at 2:30. We'll be gathering at 2:15 and having some shared celebrations together. This is our sixth year on air, and we're looking at forming into a charitable trust to have a more viable long-term future. We also have the celebration of Planet moving into its own building coming up at the beginning of next year, and that's a very exciting announcement. So we'll be sharing all the details with people who are interested. And the movie is James and Izzy, and that's a movie that's a documentary. Taika Waititi has praised it highly. It's a film about Aroha, essentially, and aging well. So Izzy is a woman who turns 100 and is the star of the movie, and her son, James, who's her carer. It's a most extraordinary story, and I was at the premiere, the world premiere, at the Civic earlier this year, and Izzy was turning 102 on that day. So we celebrated her birthday. She was on stage as the star she is, and there was a wonderful Waiata performance backing her, and the whole atmosphere was amazing. So having seen the movie, I can testify that it's definitely worth every moment you spend in front of the screen. Now, the tickets are, it's a fundraiser for Senior Focus to make sure we have a base to work from in terms of our future. Gives us money to do leafleting, run our PO box and that sort of thing. So it's $25 entry, and that's per person. And it's payment in advance, preferably. And just contact me by email if you want to be part of this event. So my email is Anne-Marie, A-N-N-E-M-A-R-I-E dot Khoury, C-O-U-R-Y, at gmail.com. So Anne-Marie dot Khoury, C-O-U-R-Y, at gmail.com. Just flick me an email and say that you want to be included, and I'll send you details of the bank account and more about getting there and the location and so on, the ferry timetables. Parking is 180 minutes in Devonport, so you can park for 3 hours safely, and there is parking nearby. It's not that difficult. But the bus service is also very good from Akoranga bus station on the busway. And, of course, there's the ferry, which comes in starting on the hour and the half hour from Britomart. So there you go. It's not too difficult to make the 15th of August at 2:15 gathering for a 2:30 screening. And we'll all be finished by 4:15 in time to get home for a meal. So we're looking forward to sharing company of seniors across the region with us. Now, this is the time of the year where social connecting is so important for well-being, because winter can be that time when we feel shut in. And this year we have the advantage of being able to gather now that we're not subject to a COVID lockdown. So we've missed things last year, but this year we can really celebrate some of the finest in our arts. And so we've had performances of the NSO. We've had performances of the ballet coming through, and there are some more exciting things in the pipeline. So next week there is the performance Karanga at Q Theatre on the 5th of August, and that is going to be very exciting because it's one night only. And I'm speaking about this because I listened to Catherine Ryan's interview this morning, and that was with Miranea Gray, who's the choreographer and artistic director of this performance. She is the daughter of Tiahuia Gray, and Tiahuia Gray is someone who's extremely well known in the Wellington region, but not as well known in Auckland. A woman born in Waiuku, in fact, who spent 8 years on the farm, but who was gifted to be whangaed as a leader into the kingitanga. And so she was brought up under the influence of Princess Te Puia, a most remarkable woman whose stature will grow and influence will grow over the generations. And her daughter has written a book about her, mentored by Weti Ihimaira. Miranea has done a very good job. You know, there's just the sense that this work will be seminal struck me very much as I listened to the interview this morning. So from the perspective that we are now looking at our own history with fresh eyes, as people are beginning to put together what needs to be incorporated in New Zealand history as it's taught in schools, what are the gaps, particularly with a gender lens? We need to consider the roles of women in society and women who've made significant impact on our world in so many different ways. A lot of us will know the name of Kate Shepherd. A lot of us will know about our early politicians, a woman who got to Parliament. And some of us will have a sense of women in history in New Zealand. But there will be a lot of women whose names are completely unknown to the majority of people. And that is sad. So I think it's really significant that in a pandemic-driven environment, we actually had a quietening down of the flurry of activity of normal life that actually enabled people to take stock of things. A big crop of memoirs is in the offing. Some of them have come out, some of them have been celebrated, some of them are still coming. But that period last year when people weren't able to socialise got people thinking and reflecting and diving in to doing the telling and the remembering of many stories of significance. And this is where we see books coming out. Patricia Grace's memoir that was visited on us in May was quite amazing in that it drew curtains back over many of the things that had been forgotten or hidden or had never been aired about land, about land grabs, about the significance of marae to iwi in terms of helping them hang on to land and preserve land. And she makes the comment in her book that the struggles to keep hold of the last of the land that her iwi had in title along the Kapiti Coast was actually assisted in being able to be saved by the existence of the marae, because once the marae was set up and functioning, it's like a stake was in the ground, and people actually started to respect the iwi's wishes more, or take them into consideration. You know, there was something definite there on the map, and it constituted a form of active ownership as opposed to passive ownership. And I felt this was a really significant statement, because it's driving other initiatives around the country too in a similar way. And whether people consciously see that as the motive for establishing marae, I doubt it very much, but it's definitely a long-term benefit. Now, going back to my earlier comments about people taking the opportunity during COVID to write, there are a number of amazing books coming out, and there are a number of writing workshops and activities coming up. So Going West Live are doing their normal celebrations that they have at this time of the year. So the 14th of August is a gala night, and then various things will be spread out over September, October and November. Word in Christchurch is a festival of writing, which is going to be have some amazing new books celebrating new writing coming through, and that I think is going to be worth attending this year. Apart from the fact that big names will be there, and I gather Helen Clark and quite a few kind of senior politicians or politicians are around in the offing, but there will be some young Māori authors and Pacific people represented. So more about that next time. But going back to Mirania Gray's Karanga at Q Theatre, it's not just a performance. She has produced this book in which she includes discussions and writing that she has shared within her whānau, things that her mother wrote. She's interviewed her father, and she, of course, draws on the rich history that Te Ahuia was part of in terms of her being brought up in the Ramsden household in Wellington, Eric Ramsden being a journalist and being very familiar with Parliament, Te Ahuia's preparation, in fact, for her role, where she was able to connect with people of wildly different backgrounds, where she played prominent roles in welcoming distinguished visitors to marae and to the museum and to Heringa Waka marae in particular, and Victoria University, as well as to Ngāti Pōneke. And so when the Dalai Lama came to Wellington, he spoke in his own language. He spoke Tibetan at the ceremony, and the key role, of course, that opened proceedings was the karanga, and that was done by Te Ahuia. I recall her as a student at Victoria University in the non-Western music course, playing the gamelan orchestra. And when I used to go to sessions, sometimes I would be taking my toddler with me, but we were warmly welcomed, and Te Ahuia would often grab the sheepskin rug that I had for him to lie him on, so he could have a bit of a nap. She would often grab that and give him a cuddle and help me sort of set up so that I could get on with actually playing these gongs. I I fondly remember her in so many ways and so many contexts, and her hosting Māori students coming into the city for the first time to study, even within her own home. It was kind of like a type of Mariah, really, the way she ran things. I was really, really moved by that interview. So if anybody's interested in the book Karanga or the performance, or who wants to hear the interview, go to the RNZ website, rnz.co.nz, and you can find it there. Now, today I want to talk about our history and culture, because I think there's a sense in which we are a nation that's a little troubled. We have a number of different strands of our history, and some have been celebrated long and loud over the years, and others have been below the surface. They haven't really been brought out to be examined. Some haven't been opened up for scrutiny because they were embargoed. They were part of history under the wraps. That's war history, or that's politicians' lives and their writings, things that have been had a 50-year embargo on them, haven't seen the light of day until relatively recently. So we're just now starting to get a sense of a lot of the things that happened in the past that weren't celebrated. And it's also about diversity and where our diversity wasn't something treasured and wasn't something that got celebrated. It tended to mean that some people who were different or whose experience was different from the mainstream really was kept out of the limelight or wasn't given prominence. And from that point of view, if we look at how New Zealand was settled, there was a big emphasis on education. There was a big emphasis on celebrating the early settlers and the ones who came on the first four ships. There was a big emphasis on the early graduates from our universities, and there was a big emphasis on those who got into Parliament and who were able to take leadership roles in society. But that didn't include people of colour a lot. It didn't include a lot of women. And some of the history is going to become richer. Our history is going to become a tapestry of many colours. There's going to be many different threads, and we're going to be all the better for it. It's not a matter of smashing and bashing and ripping up a whole lot of statues and a whole lot of people's books, and it's not that type of exercise. And while that might be something that people fear will happen, it's more a making room for greater diversity. It's like peopling the stage. Instead of having half a dozen prominent people, we'll have like 25 people, and they'll be in different groups because they represent different tribes. And we're all tribal in a sense. I'm not meaning this in a negative way. I'm just saying we all have cultural strands and roots. But I can think of aspects of my existence growing up that I found it hard to find a place for. For example, in school, a lot of sayings that we had in our family, and I never heard them ever referred to at school, and I never read them in books. And they've become something that I now treasure and have written about in poems, and am now thinking about how to incorporate into short stories. Things like, we've read about them on jam tins. What a wonderful saying that is. And the flavour of it just grabs me. And, of course, there was a reality to it. I mean, many jam tins on shelves were actually covered over. They had a newspaper wrapping going around them, and that was how people stored all sorts of things in these tins, and they just covered up the normal kind of advertising label was newspaper. And the saying we've read about them on jam tins was kind of like, you know, well, they're on the fish, last week's fish and chip paper. Same difference. It's an important time for us in New Zealand to mark what makes us unique as a people. And more I hear on whether it's the radio, whether it's people making statements about things that they want to voice, they refer back to the Kiwi spirit or the Kiwi character. Well, the fairness that people like to think is a very strong influence in our way we do things. And I think there's a sort of acceptance that there is some common shared values that we all have that we can all aspire to celebrating, no matter what the colour of our skin, no matter what languages we speak, and no matter where we have grown up or been born. So we may have been born in the country, we may have been born out of the country, we may have grown up partly in New Zealand and partly somewhere else, or we may have come here quite, you know, relatively recently, but we have adopted the Kiwi spirit or the Kiwi way of life by choice, by design, by deliberate intention. And there's, because of the diversity, there is a need to draw on this sense of common shared acceptance of our character or our spirit. And some people want to narrow that. They want to keep that back to what they experienced or what the world was like, say, in the 1950s growing up or the 1960s. And I do know that we had a universal sense of who we were and who we are now based on how our schooling was growing up, because we all had essentially the same school journals and the same kind of textbooks, and so we were taught a very defining way of looking at things. But at the same time, there was a sense of equality. There was a sense of we shared things together rather than there were a privileged few and a smattering of everyone else. There was a sense in which we're all in this together. And, of course, there are some people who were in a different world. There were some people who were in private schools. There were some people who were in native schools growing up, perhaps in the generation before me. And they were not allowed to speak Māori. They had to speak English. So there's quite a big difference, and it wasn't an inclusive difference. So when we think about it, it wasn't quite that we all had the same. It wasn't quite that way. It does bear a lot of thought now that we have the diversity kind of in our face, and it's harder for people to swallow. I mean, a lot of people now travelling around New Zealand, because they can't travel overseas, come back to Auckland and they comment on, oh, how different it is around the country, how New Zealanders are more homogeneous in small towns in the South Island They don't see so many people who are from different backgrounds, and they make comment about it, not necessarily in a negative way, but just in a slightly surprising way, because they're so much more used to the diversity because it's with them every day, that when it's not there, they really do notice it. And I think this is probably one of our biggest divides that we have. It's not so much a rural-urban divide as a South Island, North Island, or south of the North Island, rest of the South Island, and Auckland, and regions connected to Auckland. Yeah, we've got those sort of almost four zones. It's a different kind of world from the world that I grew up in, where Auckland didn't have the dominance it has now, and the regions were queens of their own domains. And so there was pride in your region. And coming from Canterbury, I was very proud to think of myself as a Cantab, as much as I thought of myself as a New Zealander. But that kind of thing doesn't seem part of children's thinking growing up these days. They don't have the regional labels and the regional pride that they once had. That's my sense. I might be wrong. Now, I think it's time for a music break, and I've chosen the Scarborough Fair well-known piece because it speaks of my background. I think of the herbalist uncle who grew herbs that he imported from England on his farm, and Cole Papa's Bible of herbs and herb production that we had. And I think about festivals and fairs, and how important the annual AMP show was, how it was just the highlight of the year. It was when you got a new dress and new shoes, and if you were lucky, even got a new hairdo. So I'll share that music with you now.
Are you going to Scarborough Fair? Parsley, sage, rosemary.